My name is Innocent Francis Franziza, originally from the Democratic Republic of Congo, North Kivu, a country known for a lot of ethnic violence, a lot of conflicts because of the minerals. I was born in the North Kivu, Masisi, supposed to predominantly occupied by the Hutus and Tutsis. I fled my country in 1996, but the conflict had started way back because of the Rwandan genocide in 1994, where there was a lot of killings in Rwanda, where the Hutus called Interahamwe killed a lot of Tutsis in Rwanda. So the Hutus who had committed the genocide in Rwanda fled to Congo, mostly in our area where we lived, and they came with their violence in our place. So they started the same thing, teaching people the difference between Tutsis and the Hutus, telling people that Tutsis were not from Congo, and telling people that Tutsis were not from Africa. So they called us snakes, they called us a lot of names. That kept on going on, kept on going. They started like dividing us in schools, or even in markets, or even on the way whenever they found us. I was young, but I saw a lot. However, this escalated in 1996, where there was a lot of killing, raping, and we did not have good time by then, because I witnessed a lot of people being killed. I witnessed my sister being killed, or even other people. I witnessed my mom being raped in my face. That was horrible. In 1996, I think I was seven, when I was at, I think I was seven or six when I was at school, when there was, I think it was a Tuesday, when there was a terrible fighting and they phoned us home. But by then I was young and my parents were business people, they were not home. They had left us with a maid. So when they came killing people, they killed our neighbor, and we were hiding in the house, and our maid decided to hide us, told us to keep quiet. But our maid was a Hutu though. Our maid was a Hutu who had lived with Tutsi for a long time, and he did not have any time, any problem with other, like with Tutsis or with Hutus. He believed that all people were the same. So we spent almost like 2 weeks to walk from our place to cross to Uganda. I walked from Congo to Uganda in 1997. We met our parents in Uganda because we did not know where they were, because by the time when that happened, my parents were not home. So we met after 2 weeks in Uganda. However, we first stayed in a refugee camp near the border of Uganda called Nyakabande. And the border of Uganda and Congo there is Bunagana. So we were later relocated, or we were reunited with my parents after 2 weeks in the refugee camp. But when we were in Nyakabande, it wasn't safe because the militia men used to come in the refugee camp, steal, rape, or kill people. So we stayed there for about six months. Then after that, the UN and the Red Cross decided to relocate us from Nyakabande to Kyangwari Refugee Settlement, where I lived for 20 years. I was in a refugee camp for 20 years. But while we were in a refugee camp, there were a lot of ethnic groups still from different countries, different areas of Congo. And life wasn't good still, because there were still ethnic violences, were mistreated. I was forced to change my ethnicity while I was there. And that's where I learned how to speak a lot of languages. I can speak more than, I think, 30 or 37 languages, because that's what I used to change my identity. Because sometimes I would be at school when they told me that I was a Tutsi, I would deny and speak a different language. And that helped me a lot. Because while we were in the refugee camp, we were still beaten, we were not given equal rights as sometimes when a student or anyone mistreated us, when you report it to a teacher, the teacher would be like, is it a lie? It's true. So it kept on going on, even at this. So at some point, it was too much. I had to leave the refugee camp because of the languages that I had to learn how to speak. Because by then, when we were in the refugee camp, we were denied equal rights. Because they thought refugees were not, others used to call us animals, all kinds of names. They did not believe that we were human beings, because we did not mix schools or churches or anything, and the education inside the refugee camp wasn't good. Education wasn't good. All services were not good. There was no good treatment, there was no food, and a lot of women now decided to even begin giving in their body to get food. Got and wanted kids because they wanted to survive. There was too much hunger, too much suffering, too much killing again, too much violence. I was in that situation for 20 years. In 2014, my parents got a chance to come to the United States under a criteria of people who had lived in the refugee camp for a long time period in the refugee camp. And there was also another category of people who lived in the refugee camp and were children who were orphans or who were born by people who were like someone giving birth to a child and they did not tell the father and they did not help get any help. So there was also that category of URM, unsupported refugee minors, and also women at risk, women who are raped or who had trauma. So that's how my parents managed to come. However, it wasn't easy for everyone, because there are those people who had trauma from back home, who saw their parents being killed, who saw their people being killed, and they were not able to articulate a story to be able to come, because one of the reasons why one was allowed to come to the US or to be relocated to another country was you had to tell a story about yourself, what you saw, why you came to Uganda, and why you cannot go back. And a lot of people had trauma, and they could not articulate or figure out how to tell that story, and you had to be consistent. And this was a problem, because people who were asking such questions were people from the US who just see things on the TV. They didn't know what happened. They just read or they're told, and they did not know that someone can go into trauma and forget everything. And a lot of people until now are stuck there because they can't tell what happened. Or when you ask, they just cry. Or when you ask, they just go mute. Until now, people are still there suffering. Then in 2016, I was also among people who were selected for because of the years that I had lived in the refugee camp. I was able to come to the United States. I think it was August 2016. But before that, I was married to my wife, Kofi Anwar Hereza. We got married in 2014. It wasn't easy though, because first of all, she wasn't a refugee, and she was born from Uganda. We are the same tribe. Well, for them, they are called uncle in Uganda. But when we are in a different country like Burundi, Congo, Rwanda, they are Tutsi. But in Uganda, they are called Ankole. But I don't know, you guys might not be able to tell, but for us, because it's the type of life we lived in, it's too easy to tell that so-and-so is a Hutu or so-and-so is a Tutsi. So when I got married to my wife, it wasn't easy at all, because I lived in a refugee camp, and a lot of people did not appreciate, especially from where she was, they were not happy because she got married to someone who is in a refugee camp. And they considered whoever was in a refugee camp as someone who is maybe not a real human being, you know, something different, someone who is not equal to other people. But she withstood that, and she was with me all the time. However, at some point in 2016, I was not able to come with her because she was not a refugee, so she did not qualify for that program. Had to leave her with my son by then, was young, and she was pregnant with my daughter, Ariana. When I got here, I thought it was going to be easy for me to get them here. It wasn't as easy as I thought. Because first of all, when I came, I expected a lot. I expected the Lord, I expected to find a very beautiful house waiting for me. A lot of money, a lot of food, a lot of clothes. And I promised not to send out a lot of money when I got here. But when I got here, I think it took me like 3 months to even send out money. Because I had a lot of expectations, wrong expectations. We used to watch movies when we were home. When they're taking American pictures and videos, they go on top of Boston. They don't go to Magnolia, they don't go to London, they go to beautiful places with very good buildings. Because when I came, when I reached the New York, it was the first place where I first started experiencing a very big difference, because there was a place where we were waiting and someone was like, you should be here. There's a restroom there. Whoever wants to help himself, there's a restroom. Please be here and remain seated until someone comes for you. So I was made a leader of whoever was waiting there. So they had showed us a place. They said it was a restroom. So it was too noisy and I wanted to make a call to tell my wife that I was in the US. And I wanted to go in the restroom. I thought it was a place where I was going to sit and rest and do whatever I wanted to do. So when I got there, it wasn't a restroom, it was a bathroom. I went and called someone. I was like, hey, someone might have told us something, but it wasn't true. So one of the attendants was like, what do you mean? I was like, someone told me that there was a restroom here, but there isn't. So she came, she was like, it's there. I opened, it was a bathroom. I was like, no, it's not. Yeah, so then while we were still waiting there, one of my friends or one of the people that we were together was like, can I go and ease myself? I was like, sure. So when it was time for us to go to get another plane to go to different states where we were supposed to go, and one of us was missing, and so they asked me, where is another person? I said, they went for a short call. And someone was like, no. You can't. Who called that person? You're still new. How? Like, who called? I was like, no. They went for a short call. And for me, with my English back home, a short call means someone's going to pee. So that's when I started having a very big difference when I came here. So I boarded a plane from New York to Boston, and expecting still a lot, because I've never seen a place like this in the movie. So, someone picked me up from, it was a case worker, picked me up from Logan Airport. We drove on 128. So I started seeing woods and squares on the way. I was like, can you stop? He goes, why? I'm like, I was told I was going to America, and where are you taking me? We're like, I'm already in America. He was like, you're already in America? I'm like, nah. This is not America. Like, I'm taking you to a place. I was like, no. Can you call the police? He goes, do you have a phone? I said, I don't have. Can you borrow me your phone? So I even did not know the police number. So he was like, okay, the police number is 911. So I called. And I was like, I'm kidnapped. So they're like, where are you? I said, I'm just somewhere. I don't know. It's my first time here. They're like, so where are you? I said, I don't know. So I spoke to them, police came, and they're like, what's wrong? I said, I was going in America, and this guy's taking me somewhere. Because, like I said, back home, I didn't know that I would see a place with woods. And I was on 128, I was like, nah, this is not America. So the policemen had to follow us up to where I was going, and they followed us up to Gloucester, where I met my parents. That was still in 2016. Like I said, I was expecting a lot. I expected to find a lot of money, a lot of food. And it wasn't the same. It wasn't like that. I was shocked. When I got here, everything was different. A lot of cultural differences. And one of the things that shocked me was the number one black or African compliment was the number one worst hoping that you can ever give to America. Because back home, when someone says your wife is fat, you're like, oh, with God everything is possible. Thank you. So, and here it's a different thing. Because I was working with someone, she was like, oh my God, I don't appreciate myself. She goes, what's wrong? She goes, I look fat. I was like, yeah, that's good. She goes, what do you mean? And I was like, yeah, you're fat. She's like, what do you mean? I said, no, I'm not. Aren't you fat? It was me, I thought I was giving a compliment. I didn't know that it was an insult. That was one of it. I remember the same thing when I thought, because I knew how to drive, it was okay, I could drive, so I got a car. I drove, and I think they saw me how I was driving, because back home, you guys are driving right or left, and back home is different. So, policeman came, and he was like, stop. I stopped. Then he said, where's your license? I said, license for what? Because back home, it's not called a license again. I said, license for what? For driving. I said, why do I need a license for driving? Then he goes, why are you driving? I said, because I can drive. I didn't know exactly what it was meaning, because it was something that I had never experienced. He said, why are you driving? I said, because I can drive. And who allowed you to drive? I said, why need anybody's permission to drive a car? I can drive, so, and I know where I'm going. I think he also had my accent. He's like, where are you from? I said, I'm from home. He goes, no, like, where are you from? I said, I'm from Africa. He said, how long have you been here? I told him. He goes, oh, so I was going to give you a ticket. And again, I didn't know what a ticket was. Was a ticket back home, was something different? I said, no, I wasn't going to take a ticket because I'm driving already, so I don't need a ticket. But I knew a ticket back home is a receipt that you're given after paying for a bus. So I was like, I don't need a ticket. I'm driving my own car, so I don't need it. Yeah, it was a lot. And again, I had issues with my wife. Because every time she called, she needed money. And every time I told her that I did not have money, she did not believe me. Sometimes I would tell her that I also don't have money to eat this week, so you might want to wait. She's like, what do you mean in America? You're in America and you're telling me you don't have money. I was like, yeah, that's what I was expected too. Here, you get money when you work. And sometimes you work, even the money you have, it's not easy to manage it, because sometimes what you do or what you need is more than what you get. She did not believe. I've been fighting for that, with that for 7 years until when she came. And when she came here, it was funny when she got where I'm living, she was like, is this America? I was like, yeah, that was the question I asked too. Yeah. So, again, I've met a lot of good people. I've met a lot of bad people. Like, I've met people who think I'm stupid because of my accent.
No.
I'm like, yeah, you're making it seem like whoever that is speak an American accent is stupid. There are a lot of smart countries who do not speak English, but they're smart. My accent doesn't have anything to do with my ability to do something. And other people are like, oh, you speak English. Yeah, because I went to school. Where? In Africa. Do you speak English in Africa? You guys came a long time ago and you taught us how to speak English. Yeah, we do. Yeah, I got such kind of things, and other people did not. Because I remember when I started working at Dunkin' Donuts, a guy who came and I gave him his coffee. He's like, nah, I don't take anything from a black hand. I was like, oh, what about if I put on a glove? He goes, yeah, I will take it. So I put on gloves, I gave him his coffee, and then I removed my gloves, I gave him his change, because now I said I can. I was like, sorry, I put on my gloves again, I gave him. Then I was like, by the way, I'm not dead, it's just how I look. I wasn't mean though, because I knew that it's not only here. When I was back home, I thought, you know, people tell us all sorts of things. They tell us we're not from Africa, they call us snakes. Sometimes even us, our parents, or from our ethnic group, when whoever did something stupid, they say, you're behaving like a Hutu. And even Hutus back home, when they're insulting their kids, they're saying, "You're being bad like a Tutsi." So when someone said, "I don't take anything from a black man," I was like, "Oh yeah, it's one of the things." You know, I just took it. But later we became friends. I told him, "This is my color and I wish I could change and be like you. However, I'm proud the way I am. Like, I feel so great when I sleep looking black, and when I wake up in the morning I still find myself breathing and still black." I'm proud. Yeah, and later we became friends. We became friends, I met a lot of people, like Melissa introduced me to a lot of people, a lot of friends. They helped me a lot. Finally, this year in December, that's when my wife and my two kids came. However, in 2000, I went back and something happened. We got another baby, but because it would take a long process, we decided, me and my wife, and we decided to leave the baby back home. So I have my third baby, who is 8 months old, who remained in Africa with her grandma. Yeah. Thank you very much, guys. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for being before Melissa. Thank you very much for always introducing me to good people. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Francis.
Anything that you want to know, that you want to ask?
I'd like to hear a little bit more about the guy who didn't want to take the coffee from you at Dunkin' Donuts and how you became friends.
The way we became friends is when he came back the next day, they made him coffee and he did not like it. So I made him coffee, and when he tasted it was good, so I told him everything black is original. So he goes, "Did you mean I'm fake?" I said, no, I just said black, I did not say white or anything. So I was like, anyway, I was just kidding, I was just telling you that a black person can be a good person, can be a bad person, can do good things and can do bad things. It doesn't matter if someone is black or white, everyone can be bad and everyone can be good. So we became friends. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And another thing, I'm surprised. When I was back home, I thought a lot of white people went to church. I was shocked when I got here. Because back home, like, there are big churches where you find like hundreds of people praying, which is different here. Here, there is a certain age of people that goes to church. And a very small number of people goes to church. It's really different. And something that still confuses me is, sometimes I believe in God. I really believe in God, and I believe, especially sometimes I have problems or see what's happening. Like right now, there's a very, very big conflict in Congo again. A lot of people are being killed. Like, I think since 2 years ago, it's been 6 million people who have been displaced.